CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here are your hosts, Katie Comley and Jeff Sargent.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, the Vancouver real estate market is going nowhere but up.
BC Ferries has canceled all sailings of its Northern Adventure ship after a human error shut down an engine.
And on commentary, after some analysis, our political commentator Phil Caudry points out which candidate is most electable for the U.S. Democrats.
We'll have all this plus arts and your weekend weather forecast coming up right here in the next hour on News 101.
But first, in UBC News, are you looking for somewhere to turf your Christmas tree after the holiday season? Well, you can drop off your clean, undecorated Christmas tree at the UBC Botanical Garden parking lot, and your tree will be chipped into mulch for the garden trails instead of filling local landfills. Please remember to remove all tinsel and decorations first before dropping off your tree. The chipping event is sponsored in part by UBC Plant Ops, UBC Land and Building Services, UBC Campus Security, and the UBC Botanical Garden and Center for Plant Research. It runs tomorrow and Sunday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the event is located at the UBC Botanical Garden parking lot, 6804 Southwest Marine Drive. Donations for the Botanical Garden Education and Outreach Program are also greatly appreciated. Now with a look at other local news, here are our anchors, Jeff Sargent, and our lone News 101 reporter and sometimes anchor, Tyler Noble.
There's no sign of a slowdown in the Vancouver real estate market. Housing prices are expected to increase by 9%, attributed to the booming BC economy and the over 30,000 people per year moving to the Lower Mainland region. The amount of million-dollar homes in the Vancouver market has also increased. BC assessment figures show 17,045 Vancouver properties were worth over $1 million in 2006, while the numbers jumped to 24,087 last year. Though housing assessments in Vancouver have decreased from 25% in 2006 to 12% in 2007, the growth is still impressive considering the real estate market south of the border. In comparison, property foreclosure rates in the United States have increased by 70%.
A recently released engineer's report has concluded that the deflation of BC Place Stadium's Teflon roof 1 year ago could have been prevented, but that those responsible did not act quickly enough to prevent the incident. Engineers Chris Hamilton and Dave Campbell of the Bellingham, Washington firm Geiger Engineers found that the deflation of the dome could have been prevented by three separate actions. BC Place staff could have increased the internal pressure or temperature of the inside of the stadium, or gone into what they call full snow melt mode, where all fans in the stadium are turned on, as well as the temperature to heat the dome above 23 degrees Celsius. Pre-existing damage and bad weather combined with human error created the tear in the roof, which ultimately deflated the dome. The report also suggests ways in which BC Place can improve their own procedures and strengthen the roof, many of which stadium officials have already implemented following the incident. Despite the definite role of human error, BC Place General Manager Howard Crossley says that no employees have been disciplined.
Eagle watchers have one more reason to be concerned this year. Brackendale, a small community north of Vancouver, is typically a popular bald eagle destination during the winter. The eagles come to the area to feed on salmon that have washed ashore after dying from spawning in the Chequemus River. But because of this year's low salmon run, the eagles are lacking food and have not been spotted in high numbers in the region. Brackendale has an average of 1,750 eagles from November to February feeding on the salmon carcasses. The count reached a high of 4,000 back in 1994. The increased attention towards these fascinating birds has drawn thousands of bird lovers to the village each year and has even spurred an annual bald eagle festival that draws hundreds of people each January. It's not yet known why the salmon run is so low this year. The Department of Fisheries and Oceans has confirmed the below-average run number. Meanwhile, biologists say there are several reasons, including climate change, fish farms, and sea lice. All right, we're going to take a quick break now, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Another night's work well done. And so easy without that nuisance Spider-Man.
I didn't know you cared.
You!
Yes, Electro. And I'm going to short-circuit you once and for all.
You would have been better off in the hands of the police. You are no match for my power.
It takes more than power to win. It takes brains and knowing your enemy.
I'll pit my power against your brains any day.
That, my thieving fiend, is the result of brains.
Use your brain. Turn off all the lights when you leave a room. If every household in BC turned off one light bulb for 4 hours a day for 1 year, it would save enough electricity to power all the homes in Mission for an entire year. This Power Smart play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Interested in NGOs or the nonprofit sector? Want to teach in another country? How about a position in the commerce or engineering sector? Do you want to travel abroad and have a life-changing experience? Isaac UBC offers different internships for all kinds of specialties. We are looking for students interested in fields such as the HIV/AIDS pandemic, community empowerment, business administration, education, environment, and sustainability, and much more. If you're interested in working abroad or helping out on campus, please contact ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. That's ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. It's up to you.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:15. BC Ferries has cancelled all sailings of its Northern Adventure ship after human error prompted the ship's engine to shut down on Wednesday. The ferry, which traverses a route from Prince Rupert to Port Hardy, had to make an unexpected stop in the town of Bella Bella Wednesday after the wrong lubricated oil was placed in the ship's engine system, causing it to stop working completely. More than 50 passengers were stranded in Bella Bella, most of whom have now been flown to their destinations. Though all sailings of Northern Adventure have been suspended indefinitely, BC Ferries Director of Media Relations Deborah Marshall says the ship is reliable and the recent mishap had nothing to do with the engine itself. The Northern Adventure is the replacement vessel for the ill-fated Queen of the North ferry, which sank after running into an island in 2006 due to another human error. Now, with more provincial news, I'm joined once again by Tyler Noble.
Thank you, Jeff. The provincial NDP are letting it known that their new political agenda plans to be tough on crime. Opposition House Leader Mike Farnworth says it's all part of a plan to redefine his party as a defender of law and order because he thinks that they've let the provincial right depict the NDP as being soft on crime for far too long. Several times over the past year, as his party's public safety critic, Farnworth has demanded more police on the streets, stronger laws to prosecute crimes, and the deportation of foreign criminals. He also suggested anyone wearing gang colors be banned from bars. It's an opportunity that has arisen recently with the wave of gangland killings that have swept the Lower Mainland in the fall, giving the NDP an opening to accuse the Liberals of doing too little to stop the escalating crime here in Greater Vancouver.
As part of their new harm reduction strategy, the BC Ministry of Health will supply crack pipe mouthpieces to people who smoke crack. The program is aimed at cutting down on the transmission of bloodborne diseases such as hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, tuberculosis, and syphilis that can be spread through open burns and sores on the lips of crack smokers who share glass crack pipes. Dr. Perry Kendall, the province's chief medical officer, says simple mouthpieces made from surgical tubing will be distributed by outreach workers through needle exchanges and other community health services as early as April. Kendall also says that the project will be cheap and relatively easy to implement and hopes that it will reduce the transmission of disease for addicts of the highly addictive drug. We're going to take another break now, but when we come back, we'll update you on national and international news. Stay with us. News 101 will continue right after this.
Holy smokes! I can't believe I'm part of the coolest club in the world!
Bub?
Yeah?
So, what club is that?
CITR! As a club member, I get ginormous discounts on the Friends of CITR card, which in itself, Timmy, I must say, is pretty amazing. I get dirt cheap prices at stores and shops I'm at all the time anyway! To be honest, it feels like being in a club within a club!
Wow! Hey, I want a Friends of CITR card!
You don't even have to be a member to get one, although clearly you'd be that much cooler if you were a member. Go purchase your Friends of CITR card down at CITR, or at special events they sponsor, such as concerts, membership drives, and shindig.
I got it. It feels like having special powers. I go into stores and bam! Discounts.
Tis what I said.
Hi, I'm Kirsty.
And I'm Sheila.
And we're both single moms. We started SPOC UBC, Single Parenting on Campus, an AMS club, with the hope of drawing attention to the additional challenges single parenting students face on our campus. We want to create a space for single parenting students to find resources and support.
Our first meeting will be held on Tuesday, November 6th from 11 to 12:30 at the Women and Gender Studies WAGS building right next to Brock Hall. We welcome all single parenting students and, of course, allies. And please remember that your children are always welcome.
Please help us spread the word by informing any single parenting students that you know about our group. We're also open to receiving anecdotes or stories from single parent students regarding their time spent at UBC.
Feel free to drop by our meeting on November 6th or send us an email at spoc.ubc@gmail.com. We really look forward to hearing or seeing you.
And the news continues on CITR. An arrest was made this afternoon at Toronto's Pearson International Airport after a man ran through security and boarded a plane. Police say at about 9 o'clock this morning, security officials chased a man all the way from the screening area through the airport onto an Air Canada Jazz plane. Once he arrived on the airplane, the man was confronted by the crew and subsequently arrested. Police say there were no injuries or damages involved in the incident, and the police are currently investigating. They say they believe the man chose the airplane as a random hallway to run down to escape police. The man is believed to be a Canadian citizen, but officials are unsure of where he lives. The flight was scheduled to fly to Charlottetown, and it was delayed but did arrive safely. Police said that the man would likely face a criminal charge of mischief.
Canadian universities could produce more doctors at a lower cost to students and taxpayers by switching to a three-year med school program, according to a new article in the Canadian Medical Association Journal. Such three-year programs have existed for many years at universities such as McMaster in Hamilton, Ontario, and the University of Calgary. But Dr. Paulie Baer, editor-in-chief of the journal and professor of medicine at the University of Ottawa, says more evidence is needed to see how three-year medical programs compare against the traditional four-year program. Iber says unless there is proof an extra year of training produces better doctors on average, there's a fair bit potentially wrong with forcing students and taxpayers to supply another year's worth of tuition. Currently, Canadian taxpayers foot a bill ranging from $170,000 to $200,000 for each year of training a med school student receives, and students are expected to pay an average of $16,000 a year for tuition. According to Iber, there's no evidence of yet that a shortened three-year medical program dramatically affects a doctor's performance.
Canada is pledging $1 million in emergency aid to Kenya after violence has broken out following a presidential election. The million dollars will go to the Kenyan Red Cross for medical supplies, food, water, and shelter. Canada's federal government has condemned the violence in Kenya but recognized the growing need for supplies as over 300 people have been killed and 100,000 forced out of their homes. Canada has condemned violence in Kenya stemming from the disputed presidential election and is promising $1 million again following what observers have called an election with many irregularities on December 27th. And in that election, President Mwai Kibaki was reelected. But the suggestion of an unfair election has spurred violence so severe that both Kibaki's Kyuku tribe and opposition leader Raila Odinga Luo's tribe have accused each other of genocide. The government is warning Canadians to avoid non-essential travel to the East African country.
Turning now to international news, and we turn to our friends at Free Speech Radio News.
50th anniversary of independence from Britain today. The military government is celebrating in its new capital of Naypyidaw, while the opposition party holds ceremonies at their offices. But the people of Burma say that they're not feeling the true freedom of independence today. FSRN's Ronald Aung Nang has more.
Soldiers raised the national flag at a pre-dawn ceremony at a city hall in the new capital, Naypyidaw, precisely at 4:28 a.m., the exact moment of the announcement of independence from Britain. The Hunters leader, Senior General Tan Shui, was absent from the ceremony, but he called on the country to go ahead with the regime's roadmap to democracy in a message read by an official during the ceremony. But the United States, the European Union, and the United Nations have dismissed the so-called roadmap as a sham due to the absence of detained pro-democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi's political party in the process. Burma gained her independence in 1948. After enjoying just more than 10 years of democracy, the military led by General Nguyen took power, saying to prevent the nation from separatists. Since then, people of Burma have been trying to topple the military regimes in several occasions. The last attempt fighting for freedom was last September, when hundreds of thousands of people got on the streets, extraordinarily led by Buddhist monks. People and monks asked the generals enter into dialogue with opposition democracy icon Aung San Suu Kyi. Aung Wei is a poet and activist who took part in the September uprising. He recently arrived at the Thai-Burma border after fleeing arrest by military intelligence.
I feel like we had lost independence. The uprising led by students in 1988 and recent uprising led by monks in 2007 are the struggles for the second independence.
With mounting pressure from United States and European countries, the military had appointed a minister to liaise between them and Aung San Suu Kyi, who has been under house arrest for more than 10 of last 16 years. There were three subsequent meetings between Aung San Suu Kyi and liaising minister Woo Aung-chi until mid-November last year. But Aung San Suu Kyi's party, National League for Democracy, says there has been no progress since then. Nhan Nguyen is a spokesperson from NLD.
Since November 19th, we haven't seen any development. We, the NLD, are absolutely not satisfied. We are worried about the process for dialogue and national reconciliation.
Instead of negotiation and dialogue, the continued arrest of the activists who took part in the September uprising is going on. Day 9 is the General Secretary of Assistance Association for Political Prisoners, Burma. They have monitored the arrest on political activists.
The junta keeps arresting people on their wanted list. On January 2nd and 3rd, 8 people who participated in the protest were arrested. One woman who was seen on video footage crying against the brutality of the soldiers was arrested last night. Altogether, there have been more than 700 people arrested so far.
In yet another disturbing report, a United Nations document released in December of last year stated that UN envoy Paulo Sergio Pinheiro was banned from the Yewis crematorium in Rangoon. Pinheiro said he received reports that large numbers of bodies had been incinerated during the early morning hours of September 27th through 30th. Since the uprising, some people fled to border, and some are still in hiding. Most of the student leaders and monks who led the September demonstrations are still under detention. On the New Year Eve, military government of Burma increased on the annual fee for satellite TV discs by then 160-fold. The discs are the only source of independent news to Burmese people. The Burma's democracy icon, Aung San Suu Kyi, said there is no independence without democracy in her speech during the northern trip just before attacked and arrested by military.
What I mean is, the democracy system is the only one suitable for an independent country. Only democracy can assure the freedom of the people. Only when people have freedom, the country can be said to be independent.
For FSRN, I'm Ronald Online in Chiang Mai.
And thanks very much to Free Speech Radio News for making that piece available for rebroadcast. While you're driving, multitasking may work against you. That, from new research at the University of Utah, shows that talking on a cell phone while driving may slow down your driving. Researchers contend because your mind is occupied with other things, you'll navigate streets less efficiently, slowing down traffic. People talking on cell phones spend about 50 extra seconds behind a slow vehicle before changing lanes, with about 10% of drivers talking on the phone while driving. This can add up to slower traffic and longer commutes. Well, it's time now for another break here on News 101, but stay tuned for commentary and much more coming up on the other side.
everyone. We're from the UBC Food Society.
Yummy.
And we're the only food club at UBC.
We're about feeding students, but also teaching them how to feed themselves. Through our restaurant outings and cooking workshops, we hope to expose you guys to the diversity of cultures, flavors, and food communities Vancouver has to offer.
So if you want to get involved, email us at foodsociety@gmail.com or check up on our website at www.ams.ubc.ca/clubs/foodsociety, or you can even join our Facebook group.
Stressed, anxious, lost? AMS Speakeasy Peer Support is here to help. We offer free and confidential support to all members of the UBC community. Located at the north entrance of the sub, we offer drop-in peer support, information, in-person and email referrals, and operate an after-hours crisis line. Call 604-822-3700 for support, or check out ams.ubc.ca/speakeasy for further information.
Welcome back to News 101. It's now time for commentary, and this week, Phil Caudry discusses the different impacts that the three leading Democratic presidential candidates will have on their party's electability if nominated.
The Democratic Party will effectively choose one of three leading presidential candidates as its party's nominee within a month. By February 5th, dubbed Super Tuesday, where many of the U.S. states vote at their state's caucuses and primaries, a clear nominee shall emerge. The three leading Democrats are the same since the beginning of the race: Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and John Edwards. Voters have had ample opportunity to take in the candidates' messages, which have oftentimes been so similar that Democrats are having difficulty choosing between them. And although in terms of specific policy, it is difficult to differentiate the candidates, whichever candidate comes out of the nomination process alive will have a drastically different impact on perceptions of the Democratic Party and its electability. Hillary Clinton enters the 2008 election as the most polarizing candidate of both parties, and the candidate with the highest negatives. Clinton is a well-known candidate, having a long political history as both First Lady and a New York Senator. She is famous and infamous. While she would be able to rally the hardcores in her party, her ability to attract Republican and independent voters remains weak. If Clinton wins her party's nomination, expect the stories of the 2000 and 2004 elections to be rehashed. It will be another narrow victory, and probably for the Republicans. Rather than rallying around their own candidate, Republicans would rally around a large anti-Hillary coalition to stop her from winning. Clinton would also mark a return to the past, as Clinton often refers to her husband's legacy on the campaign stump. While Bill Clinton had two successful terms in office, his legacy is also polarizing amongst American voters. On the other hand, Clinton is a household name and has been successful at rallying her base so far. Whether that translates during a general election remains to be seen. Barack Obama, the senator from Illinois, is running a transformational campaign. His populist message of changing the business-as-usual politics in Washington is resonating with voters. His political stardom has skyrocketed in just 2 years. Obama is seen as a reformer, a politician who has the capability to attract independents and Republicans. Barack Obama wants to restore the faith in politics among Americans, and so far his message is resonating well on that front. However, Obama has faced criticism for lacking detailed policy planks on both domestic and foreign issues. He has only been a senator for 2 years and cites living abroad as a child as his best foreign policy experience. This inexperience, while reinforcing his message of change and a new politics in Washington, could hurt his chances in a general election if he faces off against a seasoned Republican that knows what to say and when to say it. John Edwards, also running a transformational populist campaign, is no longer the Sonny Edwards of the 2004 election. Edwards' message is a darker one now, with a real sense of urgency for the need to take away the power from corporate elites and put it into the hands of the people. He wants to use politics as a vehicle for change to help middle America. Edwards' message paints an us-versus-them picture, where a small group of neocons control all the levers of power. Edwards doesn't hold back any punches and remains adamant with his message. If Edwards is to emerge as the Democratic nominee, he is currently the most electable Democrat, However, once his populist message reaches audiences beyond the caucuses and primaries, it is sure to polarize the U.S. into blue versus red states, as was seen in the 2000 and 2004 elections. He is unlikely to appeal to any Republicans and will most likely lose the independent vote. Edwards would make the Democratic Party look angry and radical. This is most likely to scare away more than a few votes and cost his party the election. So while the three candidates are similar in policy, the political message that will be sent if nominated drastically varies. And in American politics, the message tends to outweigh the actual policy in voters' minds. The fortunes of the Democratic Party will be more than clear in just a month. If the Democrats want to be strategic, they should nominate Barack Obama. For News 101 Commentary, I'm Phil Caudry.
And thanks for that, Phil. Well, our producer Tyler Noble is here now with a look at our oddity of the week. And Tyler, you have a strange but true, very local oddity this time.
Yeah, that's right, Jeff. Another week filling in on the production desk here as well. So
doing a fine job as always.
Thanks very much. Yeah, pleasure to be bringing you another oddity here. And this one, of course, as you say, local, so maybe a little more resonance with our listeners. Drunk drivers craving late-night burgers may have their meals served with 24-hour license suspensions. Surrey RCMP's Project Wolf, which is short for Would You Like Fries, has traffic officers sitting at drive-through windows in hopes of catching intoxicated drivers. The project came about after numerous complaints of wild drunken behavior at fast food joints after club hours. This weekend will be the fourth time the project takes place. Now, the way it works, officers wear plain clothes and sit near the drive-through windows. If a driver looks, acts, or smells suspicious, restaurant employees will tip off the officer by the window. A second officer outside will be notified, through the radio and stop the vehicle as it pulls away. Officers simply confirm the workers' observations and don't involve them in court proceedings. So far, merchants have found the project to be very entertaining. Whether it's been effective, another issue. One officer stationed at a Surrey McDonald's, though, had already given out 10 suspensions and 2 impaired driving charges over 2 weekends. Officers are also looking for people impaired with marijuana, cocaine, and crystal meth. Discuss.
Well, now, I think I saw this on the news the other day, and I think a Tim Hortons was also involved. Well, I mean, you know, if you're intoxicated, probably Tim Hortons not the best place to go because there'll probably be cops there anyway.
That is true.
But people somehow tend to forget that because Tim Hortons is open 24 hours. Not every McDonald's is open 24 hours.
A lot
most
of the restaurants
in
Tim Hortons, and you can actually go in and sit
you
down.
You can actually go inside. Yeah.
Coffee. Mm-hmm. That's a big one.
Home-style food. If you want Timbits at 3 in the morning, you can get Timbits at 3 in the morning. But I guess it's just, you know, the cops figured it out, so everyone's better watch out.
Well, you know, the thing with criminals is they'll always continue to find ways to get around the law. So this is just another example of another effort for law enforcement to try and be a little clever and crack down on people that way. And certainly, I think it's easy for them to get the support of merchants like this when often they're victimized by drunk people pulling up to their establishments.
Well, that's part of the problem, right? I mean, these are the very few places that are open late, you know, after the bars are all shutting down or, you know, drive-through fast food places. So, yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of the times the employees at these places, like McDonald's or Tim Hortons or what have you, tend to be quite young. I mean, they're high school students working the night shift or, you know, people, you know, and with a skeleton crew, so you can't really readily defend yourself. If you have a bunch of drunken, belligerent, you know, clubbers coming in after hours, it does pose a safety issue. So, you know, kudos to the Surrey RCMP for getting creative with this project.
No, I think it's a great idea, actually. But, it shouldn't be. I was just thinking, how difficult would it be for them to spot these people? Probably not very, when you think about it. They come up through a drive-through window. You're actually right there in front of them. So I think it's a brilliant idea.
They're coming from a club. They're wearing, like, a popped collar shirt and a bunch of, like, facial glitter. You know, their hair's all
down. No stereotyping here. No.
I mean. No. Well, Jeff made a good point, though. Well, I don't know if it's a good point, but he thinks that the name of the project should be changed to Would You Like Fries, but spelt properly, like Y-O-U. So it would be Wilf and not Wolf.
Yeah, it still rolls off the tongue, Wilf.
Right.
It does.
I thought Wolf sounded a little awkward too. I'm not even sure if that's right. W-U-L-F. No.
I mean, this is. I mean, we don't want to be the grammar police over here, but I mean,
we are.
That is Katie's job. Oh. But I mean, this is very, very poor grammar, and I think maybe the cops should take another look at that. But anyway, that's an aside.
But they are policemen and not English majors. But thank you. Anyway. Okay, it's break time again, but coming up next, we have the Arts Report with Katie Fitzpatrick. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Yo, listen up. Are you a musician or a budding disco superstar at any level?
List yourself in, like, the musician directory on livemusicvancouver.com, and you can find gigs that are, like, totally cool people to jam with.
We've got some groovy listings sorted by instrument and playing level, so you can find just the cool cat you're looking for. Could be a teacher, someone to jam with, or a serious musical project.
Profiles link to past and present show listings, and band rosters, too, so you can even check them out beforehand.
Choose from over 1,000 local musicians or list your own cool profile online easily and for free at livemusicvancouver.com.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR. I'm Katie Comley alongside Jeff Sargent, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Right now it is 5:41 and time to turn things over to Katie Fitzpatrick for a look at the arts.
Hello and welcome to your 5-Minute Arts Beat here on News 101. I'm your host, Katie Fitzpatrick. Now, as the holidays are winding down, the arts are winding back up again, both here at CITR and around town in Vancouver, with lots of new shows coming up. And UBC students, I know we're all going back on Monday, but it's no reason to not check out the arts. And so on that note, here's the listings that are coming up for this month. First of all, there's the Push International Performing Arts Festival, which includes more than 20 shows over 19 days, including theater, music, dance, and circus performances. That is at various Vancouver venues that last till January 16th till February 3rd, and you can find all kinds of information about that at www.pushfestival.ca. One performance that's coming up in theater is Hecuba. Blackbird Theater presents George McWriter's adaptation of Euripides' drama, set in the aftermath of the Trojan War. That's currently showing in the Vancouver East Cultural Center, and it shows until January 12th. And my sister actually went on my behalf and checked out that play recently, and the review of that is going to be airing on Tuesday's Arts Express at 2 o'clock. Something else going on right now is Women at Play, a showcase of Vancouver women in theater featuring original plays by local playwrights with all female casts and directors. You can find more information at www.jerichoartscenter.com. That's showing at the Jericho Arts Center on Discovery, also till January 12th. And I myself am going to be checking out something from that tonight, so hopefully I can let you know a little more about it on Arts Express on Tuesday. Something else showing right now is Dish Pig. Greg Leducci plays 15 roles in T.J. Dawes' behind-the-scenes look at the life of a restaurant dishwasher. That is at the Havana, a 12-12 commercial until January 19th, and we're going to have a review of that one also in the coming weeks. As part of the Push Festival, there's lots of dance events going on. One is The Space Between. The Push Festival presents a performance by Australia's Circa. That is January 22nd to 26th at the Performance Works on Cartwright. Something else coming up in dance is Fever. The Push Festival presents a Shakespeare-inspired collaboration between English dance actor Nigel Charnock and German composer and musician Michael Reisler. You can find more information at pushfestival.ca, and that's from January 24th to 26th at the Scotiabank Dance Center on Davie. In music, there's lots coming up this week. One is Baroque by Request. Alan Trudeau leads the CBC Radio Orchestra with soloist Roger Cole and Mayumi Sealer in a concert of audience favorites. That's at the Chan Center for the Performing Arts here at UBC on January 6th at 3 p.m. There's also the Bach Cantata Project, cantatos for alto and double concertos. Early Music Vancouver presents intimate solo cantatas for alto and reconstructions of two concerts for violin, oboe, and strings. That's at the Shaughnessy Heights United Church on January 11th at 8 p.m. Something else going on at the moment in music is Something's Old and Something's New. Veda Chamber Music presents a concert of Beethoven and Brahms featuring Joan Blackman on violin and Eric Wilson on cello. That's at the West Point Grey United Church, January 11th at 8 p.m. Finally, in music, there's French Music for Flute and Piano. That's showing at the Capilano College Performing Arts Theater in North Vancouver, and that's at January 11th at 11 a.m. In galleries, there's a few interesting things going on. One is Oversight, works by Trevor Brady, Christine Deckert, and others, and that's at the Canvas Gallery on Powell until January 12th. Also going on at the Coastal People's Fine Arts Gallery is Coastal Legacy, From Intricate to Monumental, an exploration of contemporary techniques in Northwest Coast First Nations art. Finally, in art, at the Le Centre Culturel Francophone de Vancouver, the Francophone Cultural Centre here in Vancouver, there's A Vol d'Oiseau, or As the Crow Flies, Photos of Birds by Eric Rossisi. That's till January 11th. Now, if you're interested in comedy, you're going to want to keep your eye on Yuck Yucks, because in the coming weeks, they have a few new comedians coming in. There's Simon King, who's on this week, and there's also Graham Clark, the host of the long-running alternative showcase, The Laugh Gallery. And he's here at Yuck Yucks from January 10th to 12th. And finally, Dwight Slade is going to be here from January 17th to 19th. Those are all at Yuck Yucks, and you can find more information at their website. Now, if you're interested in films right now, you probably want to go down to Fifth Avenue Cinemas, because they've got four films showing right now, and all four are listed all over the place as some of the top 10 films of the year. One of them is Juno, which I'm going to be doing a review of shortly. Another one is The Savages. Another one is The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, which I also checked out last night. I'm going to be reviewing on Arts Express. And the third one is the much-hailed No Country for Old Men from the novel by Cormac McCarthy. Now, speaking of Juno, I've been finding lately that almost everyone I've talked to lately has seen Juno or is seeing it soon. Now, I thought it was a less mainstream film at first, but when I went out to Silver City Riverport, which of course is the mecca of mainstream films, I was proved wrong, being told that the movie was sold out before the woman conceded that the very front row was actually still available. And this was not the only selling out that had happened that day. For a film that's being described by its marketers as different and quirky, it sure seems to be fitting in fine. It was even ironically called a cult classic before its debut, a prophecy that we have yet to see the validity of. The immense popularity of this quirky film can certainly only be explained in two ways. One, it is quirky, but has enough charm to appeal to a wider audience. Or two, it isn't that quirky to begin with. In my opinion, Juno is a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. The movie follows Juno McGuff, followed by Ellen Page, a witty and cynical teenage girl who gets knocked up by her boyfriend, Bleeker, played by Michael Cera of Superbad and Arrested Development fame. Luckily, she's supported by her parents and stepmom, and finds a couple, Jennifer Garner and Jason Bateman, to adopt the baby. Her relationships with the adopted parents and with Bleeker become more and more strained as she struggles to deal with what she calls issues way beyond her maturity level. As far as column A is concerned, Juno does have some quirk and it does have some charm. Ellen Page's Juno is definitely witty, even if she verges on being too clever too often to be believable. The script is funny and clever and the acting is good. It even has a half-decent message about sincerity and what being cool really means. I will confess that I laughed a lot and even smiled and almost got teary-eyed, but the movie experience itself was not something to complain about. But then again, I feel the same way about renting Harry Potter when I'm homesick, and I still wouldn't call that a great movie. What bothers me about Juno is the sort of prefabricated cult status it's been given. Essentially, it's a combination of Superbad, The Gilmore Girls, and Little Miss Sunshine, and yet it's being put forward as something completely new and unexpected. The website Junoverse, with its Juno t-shirts, Juno members, already in the movie Juno jokes, and authentic Les Paul giveaways, is only out there in the sense that Avril Lavigne is punk. The movie is good, and it's enjoyable to watch, but it falls into a niche like many other enjoyable movies, and its emphatic insistence that it's unique and quirky only takes away from the charm it does have. That's my review of Juno. So if you want to hear more movie reviews, make sure you tune in to Tuesday's Arts Express. I'm going to be reviewing The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, and I'm going to have a review of the show currently on the Vancouver East Cultural Center, Hecuba. Other than that, everyone enjoy your week back to school. Once again, I'm Katie Fitzpatrick for the Arts Beat here on News 101.
And before we go tonight, we're going to give you a look at your weekend weather, because Selena Ferris can't be with us. This weekend holds a series of low-pressure systems coming in off the coast, and it'll make for a very wet weekend. Rain will continue turning into showers Saturday morning. There's going to be a high of 6 degrees and an overnight low down to 4 degrees. Showers will continue on and off throughout Sunday and into next week, with no end to the rain in the near future. Sunday's high will be 5 degrees, so expect that rain in the local mountains will be turning into snow.
All right, well, that is our program for January 4th, 2008. As always, if you'd like to get in touch with us, our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news at citr.ca.
Tyler Noble produced this radio program, and for more news, you can join us Monday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, I'm Katie Comley.
And I'm Jeff Sargent. Thanks for listening. Coming up next, CITR Sports Friday. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.